As the calendar flips to October, a contentious 2020 election cycle is only weeks away from conclusion. We sit down with 4th District Democratic Congressional candidate J.D. Scholten on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Celebrating nearly 50 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa PBS. This is the Friday, October 2 edition of Iowa Press. Here is David Yepsen.
Iowa's role as a toss-up state has been cemented again this week by public polling and a contentious back and forth between candidates in races for U.S. Senate and House. In Iowa's sprawling 4th congressional district, which includes communities in central and northwest Iowa, Democrats are hoping to break through a Republican registration advantage. Now, Iowa PBS pursued debates in all four of Iowa's congressional districts, as well as the U.S. Senate race. Our Iowa Press debate series will conclude Monday night with a total of 4 out of 5 races being broadcast. In the 4th district, Republican candidate Randy Feenstra declined our debate invitation. But his opponent, Democrat J.D. Scholten, accepted. Mr. Scholten, now running for this seat in his second congressional election, joins us now for a regular edition of Iowa Press. Mr. Scholten, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you with us.
Yeah.
Journalists joining us across the table are Caroline Cummings, political reporter for Sinclair Broadcasting, and Kay Henderson is news director at Radio Iowa.
Mr. Scholten, I checked the voter registration in the 4th congressional district. Republicans have a 77,000 vote edge over Democrats as of October 1st. What do you say to those Republicans who are reluctant to vote for you?
Well, last cycle, we moved the needle 24 points, which is third most in the nation, and we got 25,000 more votes than there are even registered Democrats. And so we do have this crossover appeal. And I think one of the biggest strengths of our campaign, both last cycle and this cycle, is showing up. And whether it's showing up at this show, and thank you for having me, but it's also showing up from town to town. We went to all 39 counties at least 3 times last cycle. Last fall, we did the Don't Forget About Us tour, where we went to towns of under 1,000 people and did town halls there in every county. And then now we're going to every single town, all 374 towns in the district. And in doing so, that's where you connect with people. And you know, so many Iowans are free thinkers. They think they vote on the person and not the candidate. They vote on the person, not the party. And so that's what we're doing, going out and building relationships.
But does not having Steve King as your opponent make it more difficult for you this go round?
You know, I think a lot of people thought that was the case. But what we're seeing, it's two contrast styles of campaigning. And you see Senator Feenstra not getting out there where we're going out there. We feel we match up against Feenstra better than we did against King. You know, King, with all the controversy, if you take that aside, which isn't easy to do, but when you do, you have an anti-establishment person. And our campaign is very grassroots campaign and anti-establishment. We turned down even the DCCC's money and their help in the campaign. We want this race to be run out of Sioux City, Iowa, and not Washington, D.C.
But acknowledging the discrepancies with the voter registration, do you regret not running for the U.S. Senate seat?
I don't regret anything. We had some unfinished business to do. And, you know, I want to be representative of 4th Congressional District. I love that district. And getting to sleep in every different state park right now in Sioux City, Sioux, it's pretty great.
What do you say? If Randy Feenstra were here, he would say, you're too liberal. to represent Northwest Iowa. You'd vote with for Nancy Pelosi to organize the House. That's the attack that a Republican would make on a Democrat in that district.
Well, he's pretty extreme. That's the bigger thing. And when it comes to this district, there's some issues that just are Iowa issues. And we're going around talking to every single person. We've talked with so many farmers and grain elevators and ethanol plants, and we even went to a lavender farm in Harrison County, and so many people are saying the same thing. They're trying to do everything right and struggling to get ahead. And so especially when it comes to agriculture right now, farmers during this beautiful harvest right now, it is amazing to talk to all these people who are doing every single thing right, but not being able to have a chance to even make cost of production. Last week we were up in Palo Alto County. Roger Walker is the last dairy farmer in Palo Alto County. And just going on this farm and seeing, just having him have to adjust in life. His brother has never taken a vacation, 57 years old. And according to Roger, he's never had a date. And this guy, the only thing he knows is milking cows. And yet here we are. And it's all policy driven.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of those policies. But on a related note, we've had worrisome news on this Friday morning when we're taping it that President Trump and the First Lady have contracted the coronavirus. How do you think that diagnosis will and should change the discussion about pandemic protocols?
Well, first of all, my prayers go to the President and the First Lady and hoping for a speedy recovery. I think what it shows is that this pandemic and this virus doesn't discriminate, and it doesn't matter what the color of your skin, doesn't matter how wealthy you are. You have a chance to pick this up if you're not safe. And so I'm hoping that to the people who still are fighting masks and different things like that, I hope it raises the awareness of that and shows. The CDC and the experts say we're 8 weeks away at any single point from getting over this and getting over the hump like most countries have done. Yet we have this one foot in, one foot out approach, and we haven't had a national direction on how to, a national plan that's based on science.
So do you think there should be a national mask mandate?
I think there should be a national plan. I mean, we were all willing to commit in March to stay home, and there was never that next step. And so we have this one foot in, one foot out approach that just continues to prolong it.
There's a lot of back and forth in Washington over a coronavirus relief package. What would you prioritize in a stimulus bill?
Well, one of the biggest things is testing. We got to make sure that we have just more robust testing and as part of a solution of how do we get out of this? When it comes to so many small businesses we're talking to are really struggling right now. A lot of even ethanol plants haven't been part of the equation when it comes to agriculture and helping folks get through this. And so those are some of the areas I would like to focus on.
Economic development, and in that district that spells broadband. Mm-hmm. What should be done to develop and expand the use of broadband in that district? We've talked about it for years in our state, but it is key to economic growth. What do we do?
I mean, this pandemic has put a spotlight absolutely on this, and we've stopped at several different telecom companies and co-ops, and they all say the same thing. You know, the data maps are off, and the reason they're off is because we have, and this gets back to antitrust. You have the big ones, the big companies out in D.C., they're able to lobby, they're able to manipulate or whatever with the laws and everything. And so what we're seeing, there might be a town that's covered, but that farm outside of town, that last mile is pretty costly. One of these big companies might say, hey, we bought the rights to it, but then they won't give it access because it's not feasible economically. And so that's part of the issue. And so one of the biggest things we don't need are, I feel so many people are trying to be the first one saying, I did this and I did that. You know, we need to come together because this pandemic has shown that whether it's telemedicine, whether it's education, whether it's for these small businesses to compete, this is the way that we need to make sure going on forward, coming out of this.
But do we do it through regulations? Government passes regulation, or do we do it through subsidies, government gives out grants. How do we get that last mile, that last farm on broadband?
So this is what the telecom companies or co-ops have told me, is that there are plenty of grants out there, but there's 40 different ones, and so there's not a cohesive unit or one single place where you can apply for it, because it's you can apply here, but you also have to worry about this one, and there's all this confusion in this. So we just need to have a system that folks can apply to. But one of the biggest issues is you have these huge companies that oversee it, and these small that and they're pricing out these small local guys who know how to do it. And so we need to include these local broadband and these local rural telecom co-ops.
You just mentioned antitrust a few moments ago. That means monopolies, right? Mm-hmm. If elected, what would you support in Congress to break up so-called monopolies? What industries?
So, I mean, this is clear in agriculture. You look at every single sector of agriculture, and there's just a handful of companies that control it. We had the same battle literally 100 years ago. In 1920, the Big Five were broken up in Packers, and they controlled 45% of the market share. Right now in hogs, four companies control 70% of the market share. Right now in cattle, four companies control 85% of the market share. And as a result, they're pricing our farmers out. And so this pandemic has put a spotlight on this. We have consumers paying the most we ever have for meat. We have workers in Sioux City at the processing plants getting the same wage as when my family moved from Nevada to Sioux City in 1984. And we have farmers getting squeezed. And so my campaign is trying to build this coalition of consumers, of workers, and of farmers. And it is so clear. You know, every politician loves to talk about, oh, especially here in Iowa, I'm pro-farmer. But you're not pro-farmer when you take all this money from these monopolies that are squeezing out people on the farm. We are, farmers have the largest debt they've ever had. And when you go, especially the way we have in all 374 towns, going from town to town, farm to farm, talking to so many people that this affects, it doesn't matter political spectrum, all over the political spectrum, whether you're Democrat, Independent, Republican, they have all said the same thing. When I mentioned antitrust in agriculture, they said, you're exactly right. And so what this administration has done has ripped out GPSA. And we need to
monitor.
It's the Grain Inspecting Stockyards Pactors Administration. It used to be a standalone entity, but now it's under the division that it's supposed to be overseeing. So we need to allow our farmers to stay on their land and make a dime, and that's empowering the farmer.
What about the future of ethanol? Can farmers continue to bet on that, given the changing way of the world with electric cars and
right.
trying to move away from fossil fuels?
So we've talked with so many ethanol plants on this tour, going to all 374 towns, and one of the things I ask every one of them is, where do you see ethanol in 20 years? Nobody can give me a straight answer. And so I've met with the California Air Resource Board, and they dictate things that where the industry goes, probably more than what happens out in D.C. And they've said that if in order to get carbon neutral or decarbonize as a nation, renewable fuels have to be part of that equation. We don't get there alone just on electric vehicles. And so that's music to our farmers' ears. But at the same time, we have this administration that's completely undercut the ethanol industry, and we've had over 150 plants become either idle or lower their production, and so we got to have a future for them. I want to see a low carbon fuel standard, and I think that's a good way to go moving forward.
On the issue of carbon and reducing climate change, what else needs to be done to stem that?
I think two things. One, absolutely, we need to enforce our antitrust laws. Empower the farmers. And right now, we're asking our farmers, and we're talking with them about soil health. You're seeing that more and more prevalent, whether it's the derecho this year or the flooding last year, more and more of these extreme weather programs. Heck, up in Sioux County, they said, don't harvest right now because of the dry nature and because of the winds. I've never heard that before. And so it's enforcing our antitrust laws, but it's also making policies and incentivizing them for ways that we can either take carbon out of the air and put it into our soil and create soil health, whether that's having cover crops, whether it's putting in buffer strips, all these things. But we can't ask farmers to do it when they're not even making cost of production. So I feel we need to have an on-ramp for them. And then long term, we need to pay our farmers for their environmental services.
What role should the federal government have, if any, in water quality regulation?
Well, I feel that there needs to be some common sense approach about this. I feel going forward, we would have more water quality if we did pay our farmers for their environmental services, if we create those buffer strips, if we take the power away from these huge corporations who don't live here, who they worry about their profits, and we give that power back to the farmer and empower the American farmer and the Iowa farmer.
The Affordable Care Act may be overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. Is the country ready for Medicare for all?
I think they are. I think it is clear that this system is not working. As we are going from town to town to town, and again, Lord knows we keep do our part in the RV for the ethanol industry, keeping that alive, but almost every gas station has a donation box for someone who just got sick or someone who just got in the hospital. The amount of GoFundMes, the amount of just pancake breakfasts that you see communities have to pay for medical expenses. And so what I see, my push is for universal health care. That is my goal. Now, it might take steps to get there, whether it's a robust public option. If the ACA gets taken away, that's a completely different game plan than what's happening right now. But as of right now, if the robust public option is the next logical step, I want to continue to fight beyond that so we also include dental and mental and making it easier on people. One of my mentors, an attorney that I used to work with when I was a paralegal, very successful attorney, money wasn't an issue. 4 months into chemotherapy, his insurance company told him that his doctor is no longer in his network. That's just a travesty. We got to change the way this system is.
Kay asked a question about the role of the federal government. I want to ask you something about the role of the federal government wind power.
Yeah.
There is a lot of controversy developing in our state, in that district, over these wind turbines. So yeah. Does the federal government have a role? Is there something more we should be doing as a state?
Well, I feel investing in renewable resources like wind. I see solar as being the next wave of something bigger and what we can go towards. But as far as what the federal government does, I think it's more investing in a long-term plan and then having more local control.
How do you make sure that Caroline gets Social Security?
That's a good question. And Social Security is more and more being on the chopping blocks, and it's becoming more and more talked about. I feel the number one thing we need to do is scrap the cap. The cap is limited at, what, about 130,000, 133,000 people?
Explain, this is the cap. You pay Social Security tax on the
yep.
first $137,000
yep.
of income, and then after that,
you don't.
Okay.
So. I think it's fair to at least raise it, if not get rid of it. So everybody, if you make $1 million, then the rest from $137,001 all the way to $1 million is taxed into that. Then we will have plenty of money for Social Security.
What about raising the retirement age?
I'm not for that. I feel if we get rid of the scrap the cap, I feel that is will be plenty. We need to protect Social Security and expand it.
Iowa State and a slew of other private colleges are in your district. What's the answer to students facing mountains of debt out of college?
I think we need to invest in some sort of debt assistance program, but this is crippling a generation. So many kids I know that we talk about, hey, go to college, get that education, and then they come out. But I think one of the big problems is the reality of the district. You look at Sioux City. We send our kids off to college, you come back. And when I moved back a few years ago, the best job I could find is $15 an hour, no benefits, looking in the Sioux City Journal. And so right now we keep on adding to the tuition and saying, oh, we pass the buck on to the students. And we got to realize that if we're going to, the rest of our lives, all of our lives, I guess, we're going to have an economic challenge against China. And if we're going to have that vision of what are we going to do, we got to have the workforce that matches the moment. And in order to have that workforce, we need the educated workforce. And so we got to invest in free college, community college. I'm for debt-free college, universities. We got to invest in Pell Grants. Education is the best way to get return on investment for a future in our economy.
Immigration. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very divisive issue in our society. What do you do about undocumented workers? One of the problems we have in this state is there are a lot of people that don't like undocumented workers. At the same time, rural economies depend on those workers mm-hmm. For cheap sources of labor,
right.
Dairy, hogs. So what do you do about illegal immigration in Iowa and in the country?
So a couple things. I think the 4th District made a really good decision on the first step of this, and that's getting rid of Congressman King. The second step is, a lot of these folks work at places that were deemed essential during this pandemic. How, on one side, do we see these people as essential, and then on the other side, we demonize them, and it's wrong. And so, whether you're a man of faith or a woman of faith or not, or we're just Americans in general, we're a welcoming society. And what we're doing in the 4th District in allowing, we need to have a common sense approach to this. And so what I want to see, especially first thing we need to do is pass the DREAM Act to keep up the promise that we had. When it comes to a visa program, our visa programs tend to match the coasts and their agricultural needs more than our needs here. Let's have a visa program that matches our needs. Let's have a pathway to residency to allow folks who want to work here but don't want to become citizenships. Let's allow that. And then let's have a right or a pathway to citizenship if they want to earn the right to be here.
Are there any communities in the district that are getting it right? I'm thinking of Storm Lake, for example. You know,
Storm Lake tonight, we were supposed to have, I wasn't going to be there, but my campaign was going to have in a rally there, or just in a family event. It wasn't even a rally, just a family event to bring in a lot of the Latino community. We have our texting program, and we reached out to folks. There was somebody who was going to come, and he said he was going to come with his Trump flags and his Confederate flags, and we brought this attention to the police and to the city manager. We ended up having to cancel the event because there wasn't enough resources there to make sure that the people who are going were prevented. And so we do have deep issues in this state on this issue. And so I feel that it's something that we need to figure out solving this problem.
Okay.
The post office, should it be expanded and become a mini bank, or should it be privatized?
It definitely shouldn't be privatized. I mean, it is extremely important to a lot of these rural communities. We're going into towns of under 100 people, and that when it's open, even if it's only an hour or two a day, it is extremely important to a lot of these rural, it's a lifeline to a lot of these rural communities and these farms. And so I'd be interested in looking if we can add banking into some of this. I know there's a lot of struggles with banking and the unbanked in rural America right now.
Gun violence.
Yeah.
What do we do in our society to limit and the amount of gun violence while at the same time protecting people's rights to keep and bear arms?
I think this notion of gun safety or the Second Amendment is a false choice. I think there's an absolute combination that we can have on this. And I think it starts with, my campaign, we have 5 campaign promises that we hand out a baseball card to everybody that we see, and on the back has 5 campaign promises. The 5th one is secure our democracy from the special interests that are dictating it. And right now you see the special interests in the gun advocates having their way out in D.C. When 97% of Americans are for universal background checks and it's not passing in D.C., it shows a failure of our democracy. And so one of the things that I would like to see is protecting the reputation of responsible gun owners. And any time there is suicide or gun violence, it hurts that reputation.
We've got just a minute left, and I wanted to ask you. You've said you have visited all 375
times. On Tuesday, we'll hit the 374.
What do we call that, a full Shulton? okay, so what have you learned?
I learned that there is an economic pain outside of Des Moines in this state. And in the 4th District, we haven't bounced back since the 2008 an economic crisis. We have wealth just getting sucked out. And we have one of the biggest things I learned at the Every Town Tour last fall, where we did it in towns of under 1,000 people, local grocery stores are struggling. And we have Dollar General coming in, undercutting sales at these local grocery stores. Grocery stores that have been there 50, 60 or so years that have sponsored local baseball teams and been part of the community. Dollar General comes in, undercuts them, and they're off. Dollar General offers $8, $9 an hour. The money spent there goes out of state, tends to go to Wall Street. They have these huge tax incentives. And so we got to find a way to revitalize rural America. We do it by enforcing our antitrust laws. We could be the epicenter. We, as the 4th Congressional District, could be the epicenter of 21st century resilient agriculture. And we get there by adding technology to the district with broadband and different things, but we have to enforce our antitrust laws.
And I have to enforce the clock here. Mr. Scholten, thank you very much for taking time to be with us.
I appreciate you having me.
And we'll be back next week to conclude our special Iowa Press debates. On Monday, October 5th, 3rd Congressional District candidates David Young and Cindy Axney will join us for a live one-hour debate here at Iowa PBS and online at iowapbs.org. That's Iowa Press 3rd Congressional District debate Monday, October 5, live at 8 p.m. For all of us here at Iowa PBS, I'm David Yepsen, and thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.